Chapter 5. Lost in Committee. I go back to Harry's place and collect my kit. Then I catch the bus home, shoulders itching every time it passes a police car. Yes, I'm legally allowed to carry the Glock and its accessories, which are sleeping in my day sack in a combination locked case. The gun and its charmed holster are supposed to be invisible to anyone who doesn't carry a laundry warrant card, but I'll believe it when I see it. Luckily, the bus is not stormed by an armed SO-19 unit performing a random check for implausible weapons. I arrive home uneventfully, unpack the gun and place it on the bedroom mantelpiece, which is just to the left of my side of the bed, and go downstairs to sort out supper with Mo. Friday happens, and then the weekend. I register the Jesus phone. It wants a name, and Mo suggests christening it, if that's the right word, the Necronomipod. Her attitude has turned to one of proprietorial interest, if not outright lust. Damn it, I am going to have to buy her one. We do not discuss work at all. We are not doorstepped by zombies, shot at, blown up, or otherwise disturbed, although our next-door neighbor's teenage son spends a goodly chunk of Saturday evening playing I Kissed a Girl so loudly that Mo and I nearly come to blows over the pressing question of how best to respond. I'm arguing for Einstürzende Neubauten, delivered over the speakers of doom. She's a proponent of Schoenberg, delivered via the violin that kills monsters. In the end, we agree on the polite voice of reason, delivered via the ears of his parents. I guess we must be growing old. On Saturday morning, it turns out that we are running low on groceries. "Why not go online and book a delivery from Tesco?" asks Mo. I spend a futile hour struggling with their web server before admitting to myself that my abstruse combination of Firefox plugins, security filters, and firewalls, not to mention running on an operating system that the big box retailers' programmers wouldn't recognize if it stuck a fork in them, makes this somewhat impractical, by which time we've missed the last delivery, so it looks as if we're going to have to go forth and brave the world on foot. So I cautiously hook the Invisi Glock to my belt for the first time, pull my baggiest jacket down to cover it, and Mo and I hit the road. Anticlimax. As we trudge home from the supermarket, laden down with carrier bags, I begin to relax slightly. Even when my jacket got caught up on the front of a suicide granny's shopping trolley, nobody noticed the hardware and started screaming. This is 21st century England, home of handgun hysteria. They're not being polite. "By the way," Mo comments edgily as we wait to cross a main road, "don't you think you should be keeping your right hand free?" I scan the surroundings for feral, supernatural wildlife. If I need my hand, the shopping can take its chances.
"Then don't you think it'd be better to be carrying the bag with the bread and cheese in that hand, rather than the milk and the jar of pickled cucumbers?"
I swear quietly, try to switch hands, and get the bags inextricably entangled, just as the green man illuminates. We are a cover-free couple for the entire duration of our panicky scurry across the street crossing. "I should have held out for an attack alarm," I grumble.
"We'll sort one out on Monday," Mo says absent-mindedly. "Watch the vegetables, dear."
On Sunday, we're due to have lunch with my parents, which means catching the tube halfway across London and then rattling way the hell out into suburbia on a commuter line run by a bus company distinguished for their hatred and contempt for rail travellers. I wear the holster, this time keeping my right hand free, and Mo carts her violin case along. Our trains are not ambushed by dragons, suicide bombers, or Thonian tentacle monsters. Frankly, given the quality of the postprandial conversation, this is not a net positive. Mo's face acquires much the same impassive expressiveness as an irritated Komodo dragon when Mum makes the usual fatuous and thoughtless comment about wishing for the patter of tiny feet. We are not, perforce, allowed to discuss our work in the presence of civilians, so we are short of conversational munitions with which to retaliate. They still think I work in computer support, and Mo's some sort of statistician. By the time we make our excuses and leave, I'm thinking that maybe I'd better leave the gun behind on future parental visits. "Did you enjoy the vegetables?" I ask the steaming vortex of silence beside me as we walk back up the street towards the railway station.
"I thought you were going to roast them at one point."
"Sorry, I'm chicken," she sighs.
"You don't need to apologize for your parents, Bob. They'll get over it eventually."
"They're not to know." I glance back over my shoulder. "We could, you know. There's still time, if you want."
Time to fit in all the heartbreak and pain of raising wee ones so they're just old enough to appreciate the horror of it all? No thanks. We've had this conversation before, a few times. Revisited the situation for an update. No, the world we work in isn't a suitable one to inflict on a child you love. Besides, you're not the one who'd have to go through a first pregnancy in your late 30s. Certainly not just to please them. We walk back to the station in morose silence. A 30-something couple out for a Sunday afternoon stroll. Nobody watching us needs to know that we're pissed off, armed, and on the lookout for trouble. It's probably a very good thing indeed for the local muggers that they're still sleeping off their Saturday night hangovers. Monday dawns bright and hot and early, and I find myself waking to the happy knowledge that I can go back to work, and nobody will order me home. I roll over, feel the cooling depression across the mattress, continue my roll and sit up, relieved, on the wrong side of the bed. Mo's clearly been up for a while. When I catch up with her in the kitchen, she's listlessly spooning up a bowl of yogurt and gerbil food. I attend to the cafetiere. She's wearing what I think of as her job interview suit. "What's up?" I ask. "Need to look the part for an off-site," she frowns. "Do you think this looks businesslike?" "Very." She looks like she's about to foreclose on my mortgage. I spill coffee grounds all over the worktop, finish spooning the brown stuff into the jug, and add boiling water. "What kind of meeting?" "Got to see a man about a violin. Conservation." "Conservation? They don't grow in..."